morning. We're talking about, you know, crime and crime statistics. Now, yes, victims of crime may tell you that, you know what, these statistics, I mean, how do they actually help us? How does it help a person who has been a direct victim of crime in the last few weeks or the last few months, for that matter, recuperate their loss and their suffering and their, you know, their loss of dignity, the invasion of their space and privacy? It doesn't. It doesn't do that. But what it does do is that it gives law enforcement and the general public an understanding of where we are in the fight against crime. South Africa is not alone in the fight against, you know, rising crime levels. Other countries that are of a, well, similar social and, you know, and financial and economic situation. You have your Brazil, Venezuela, etc. Colombia, as of recently, especially in the last few years, has seen high levels of crime. And even within developed countries that do put on a very good face of attempting to cover up their crime statistics, well, basically those countries are not just one country. There are many countries and administrations within an administration. The United States would be a prime example. If you take, for example, upper class or wealthy neighborhoods, well, the actual crime rate or level in that part of the world will be like 0.1%. That means 1 in 1,000 people having experienced some form of crime in the year. But if you take areas like Fishkill is just outside Detroit, Michigan. There, your statistics are what? 4.95%. That means a good percentage of your population has experienced some form of crime during the course of the reporting year. Now, many South African crime statistics are released by SAPS on a quarterly basis. Now, this is the writing, of course, of Andrew Fraser, who we'll talk to in a minute. The latest quarterly statistics includes data for crimes reported up until the end of June 2021. Now, this data list includes complete monthly crime reporting data from Jan 2016 and, you know, covering a number of categories, provinces, districts, and police stations. Well, talking to us more about crime and how did we fare during the COVID-19 period, Andrew Fraser, marketing strategy consultant. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning. How are you doing?
Thank you for joining us, Andrew. Doing well. How did you come about creating these metrics to calculate crime during the COVID era?
To be honest with you, I've been tracking as a hobby. I've been tracking the crime statistics for the last 2 years, and then during the COVID lockdown of last year, I noticed some kind of anomalies, particularly around the period of April, May of last year, where we had the full lockdown, where the reported crime dipped incredibly. It dropped by a massive amount. And what I wanted to do was to do some to try to figure out what was causing the actual drop. You know, was it caused by the limitation on mobility, that people weren't able to move around, so therefore there was less crime? Or was it the alcohol or even possibly the cigarette restrictions that caused that massive drop in that period? So I've been trying to find a way of creating a metric of how strong those restrictions are, so that I could compare it to the reported crimes. And please remember that this is reported crimes. This is not necessarily the actual crimes that took place. It's the crimes that were reported to the police. So there is a possibility that during that period that people just didn't report crimes that happened. So we have to take that into account. And so what I did was, I tried it last year. I wasn't really that successful in getting anything that made any sense. But with the latest release, we have now more than a year's worth of data of kind of pandemic-related restrictions. So I tried to work out how many more or less crimes were reported during the last year and a half. So for that period from kind of January of 2020 up until the end of June 2021. And what I did was I, I, I've worked out a prediction of what we would expect the reported crimes to be during the period. And we have a lot of information from 2016 up until 2020 to build a prediction. We know more or less there is some seasonality in terms of crimes, and there's some trends in terms of certain crimes are reducing, certain crimes are increasing. So we can build basically an algorithmic forecast of what we expect the crimes to be in the following year. And once we know that, then we can compare that to what the actual crimes were and say, okay, we've got more or less or more or less the same number of crimes in a month. And also remember that all these crimes are only recorded on a monthly basis. So it's not a very very exact measurement of when the crimes took place. We only know they happened within a particular month. So by doing that, we can create what I call like excess crimes. There's more crimes, or there's much fewer crimes. And once we have a kind of a metric of the excess crimes, we can then compare it to the metrics of how strict were the alcohol restrictions, how strict were the mobility restrictions, and try to build a model which tries to work out how much of an impact those various restrictions had. It's possible to do it, and I've managed to get a model that fits very well, that actually like predicts the thing very well and fits the actual data. But there are limited data points. I mean, there's only 2 years worth of data, so it's not ideal. We actually would, you know, in order to do this kind of thing, you actually need a good set of data. But with the data that we have, it seems that the kind of mobility restrictions and the alcohol restrictions are similarly responsible for the drop in reported crimes. So we see definitely when there are alcohol restrictions that the contact crimes in particular, because that's the stuff that I modeled, reduce incredibly. So the alcohol has a very, very, restrictions have a very, very direct link to the actual reported contact crime.
Andrew, if I could come in there, Andrew, you know, when it comes to crime reporting, I mean, like your work or these metrics and this data would directly depend upon people reporting crimes. And, you know, South Africa, sometimes it's observed that, look, we anecdotally speak about the high rates of crime, which is right, which is true. Even the statistics match, our reporting of a high crime rate in the country compared to the rest of the world. But in South Africa, have you noticed that there is a reluctance to report crime, especially in certain circles and in certain areas, that you might have a greater or a more intensive reporting circle in the urbanized area, but rural South Africa, places far away from urban areas where you'll have one police station that serves maybe a 50, 60 kilometer square radius, well, there's reluctance in those areas, hence that impacts the data coming through to us.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm not a crime analyst in general. That's not what I do, and I think there are people that are much, much more qualified to comment on that. There's people like the Institute for Security Studies that does some very, very good work on this stuff. But yes, I think there's two sides of it. There's some logistical issues. So there are areas that have too few police stations, they have too few police. So I know in the Cape, for example, in the Cape Flats, there's been an issue with too few police stations for the number of people in an area. So you have massive inequality between the kind of apartheid spatial differential within those areas. And then obviously when you get into the rural areas where you have massive areas, it's more difficult for people to actually get to a police station or to report. But there's other issues as well. There's trust as well. So within certain communities, there's no trust of the police. They don't feel confident that that reporting a crime makes any difference, because they don't have trust of the police. And some of that is historical. Some of it has to do with corruption. Some of it has to do with ineptitude or perceived ineptitude of the police. So there's a lot of different issues. In the work that I'm doing is that we try to think that those kind of things are standardized over time. So we're not thinking that there are going to be fewer people doing it now than there were 2 years ago. That we think we try to approach it as though those kind of issues are standardized, that we expect that to be the thing. So the data should still show the same kind of trends and show the same kind of impact, even though we know that it's not complete. We know that there haven't been as many reports, etc. What has been an issue in terms of the COVID period is that restrictions in mobility mean that people are less likely to report because they won't go out. Maybe they're not allowed to go out because there are literally laws saying you can't move around and they're being stuck in their homes, for instance. Or even people don't want to go to the police station because they don't want to get infected. So, you know, there's multiple issues there. Those things are much more difficult to take out of the data.
Andrew, you know, finally, before we conclude, the ban on alcohol sales or the restrictions. Now, of course, we can call it a mixture of both ban and a restriction. You had mentioned earlier that the data does show that it significantly reduces crime. Will this be more evident, in South Africa? I mean, how does the stats compare to other countries that didn't see such a hard imposed restriction on alcohol sales, compared to South Africa?
I don't know. I haven't done the data. I haven't done the analysis. I can work with the data that I've got, so I really don't know. I think also there aren't a lot of countries that have similar levels of violent crime to South Africa. So in order to make a comparison between two countries, you need to have some kind of similarity between them. So I think if I could get some data from a country with reasonably high levels of contact crime, maybe we could do some kind of comparison. But to compare it to, say, a Middle Eastern country which doesn't have, which has got an alcohol ban all the time, for example, or to a European country where violent crime is of a much, much lower level than it is in South Africa, it becomes much more difficult to compare. And if you look at a country like the US where you have vast differences in different areas in terms of the types of crimes that happen, it's very difficult to make comparisons between countries unless you can find some kind of similarities between them. And to be honest, I haven't tried. I haven't looked for that kind of data.
Andrew Fraser, thank you so much for your time this morning, and appreciate the conversation. Have yourself a good weekend up ahead, Andrew.
All right. Thank you. Come on.